We will continue now with sharing stories. I feel like this is just such a wonderful opportunity. Even this morning, we had the devotional that Christina Samuel read and led us through, and Psalm 66 was so rich, and we ended up sitting around tables just reflecting on what this means of who God is to everyday life, and that's what our stories together help us see what it is to live out what we believe. So it's my privilege this morning to introduce to you Emily Bratcher. And you may not have had a chance to meet Emily yet because she's new-ish to College Church. She's been here a little while, but just a few months ago, she and her husband Drew went through membership. They have been around College Church Wheaton for about 7 years. They have four kiddos, and by day, Emily is a corporate marketing person. She works from home, which is good because she's got a busy household with four kiddos, and that's another full-time job in and of itself. But I, kind of like Eleanor, I've appreciated Emily from afar, though I haven't stalked Emily on Instagram. But you know how there are those people that you just admire, and particularly she and her family, they've walked through some hard stuff, and I just have appreciated the grace and the perseverance that they have demonstrated. And so it is just my privilege to ask her to come up now and share. She came to Christ as a young adult, and I feel like those stories are really good for us to hear. What is it that draws people to Jesus as an adult? And so I'm eager to hear her story this morning. So Emily, would you come up, please?
All right, this is really putting me out of my comfort zone a little bit, so you'll have to bear with me a little bit. Okay, so I grew up outside of Washington, D.C. in Northern Virginia with my mom, my dad, and my little brother, Andy, who, though younger, quickly overtook me in height, athleticism, street smart, I mean, just about everything. He got all the genes. And then a dog, Sammy, salt and pepper schnauzer, who was much beloved. And I had a wonderful childhood. So grateful to my parents for that. Spent Saturdays playing Park District soccer. I went to church on Sunday. In the summer, we'd bike and swim at the neighborhood pool or play flashlight tag with the neighbor kids. I read a lot of Nancy Drew and Babysitter's Club and baked a lot with my mom in the winters. In high school, if we would have had smartphones and social media, and thank goodness we didn't. I might have posted pictures of cheerleading and National Honor Society and interning at a senator's office on Capitol Hill and sleepovers with my tight-knit group of friends, dates with my boyfriend. In many ways, I had a charmed life, and I looked like a good kid. And in comparison to some of the other kids in my school and friend group, I rationalized that I was pretty good. You know, I didn't cause my parents too much trouble. And since I went to church every Sunday, I called myself a Christian. So right there, I mean, I was doing a lot better than a lot of my peers. But if I was honest, I had started in high school having some doubts about being all that great. There was something inside of me that was like, didn't feel right. There's dissonance. Like, for instance, I didn't know what to do about my motivations for even doing good things. Like, was I serving at a food bank in D.C. because I wanted to help or because it made me feel good? Or was I obeying my parents because it was about an image that I wanted to project? Or was it to honor them? And also, there were other things. My relationship with my boyfriend felt a little wrong, even though I was just doing what everybody else was in high school. And while the occasional drinking at weekend parties felt fun in the moment, left me with a pit in my stomach in the mornings. And I didn't really know what to do with that. But at that point, I just really didn't care too much to unpack it. Well, I went away to college at the University of Missouri to study journalism with the hope of later moving to New York City to work in a magazine. And if any of you have watched The Devil Wears Prada, but that was the life I wanted. I was like, that's what I want to do. But when I got to college, one of the best things I did was join a sorority, and I joined Kappa Alpha Theta. Any thetas out there? No? All right. Too bad. All right. So this chapter of Theta that I joined was sort of the unofficial Christian sorority on campus. I didn't know it at the time, but more than half of the girls were strong believers. And at the start of college, I was so homesick and lonely and didn't know a soul. So when some older girls, Kate and Taryn, asked me to join a Bible study, I said, sure. I stayed in that Bible study throughout my 4 years at college. So even as I was becoming more entrenched in certain sin patterns, like literally partying the night before, I would sing in the worship band on Sunday morning. That's where I was. But I was learning little by little about God and his impact on the way people lived. And wow, my Bible study leaders could have been so discouraged about my life, and they probably were, God bless them, but they planted seeds that the Lord later sowed in my life later, so I'm so grateful for them. After I graduated, my life kind of started falling apart, so I moved back home to a family life that was really unrecognizable from what it had been before. My parents were now separated. My mom was living in an apartment complex in my town that I'd never imagined she'd call home. After a long string of reckless brushes with death, my brother was at a Marine boot camp in South Carolina, and that was like a million times safer place for him than where he was doing before, so that gives you kind of a picture. My close high school friend group had become fractured, and then there was just no possibility of moving to Manhattan and getting an unpaid internship at a magazine at that point. And at the same time, I was just like increasingly sick of myself. I was like so entangled in so much yuck that was my own doing, but I didn't know how to get out of it. So I moved in with my mom, started searching for jobs, and it was depressing. And so not knowing what else to do with what felt like the very foundation of my life cracking, I started truly seeking God. I started attending a local Bible church, and I heard the gospel, I saw it lived out, and I believed, and it changed everything. So God had used some hard circumstances in my life to bring me to a place where I would finally search for him, find out who I was before him, and understand my need for him. So what I hadn't grasped before was that all of us are made in the image of God to glorify him, and that is what we are meant to do. That is what brings about true joy. Serving myself or going my own way could never satisfy, but it could continue to go very poorly as I had been finding. As Romans 3:10 says, there is no one righteous, not one. I could not stand before a holy God who made me for his glory. And because God is holy and cannot abide sin, he will rightly punish me, which meant that I and my sin was headed to hell. But of course, that's not the end of the story. God, in his great love, made a way for us to be right with him by sending his beloved son into the world to live a perfect life and die a terrible death as a sacrifice for my sin and the sin of all who would turn from their sin and put their trust in him. I realize that, as the hymn states, on Christ the solid rock I stand, all other ground is sinking sand, and it was all going to be okay. And after that moment, there are some like big things that just changed immediately. Like I stopped drinking. I like put boundaries on a relationship with my boyfriend and later ended it when it was just not gonna be right. The Bible, which had seemed so kind of inaccessible before on my own, the words kind of suddenly jumped out. So it's like truly amazing what God can do. Well, soon after becoming a Christian, I got an internship at the Washingtonian, which is the city magazine of Washington, D.C., where my now husband, who's also a Christian, was an editor. So we had a whirlwind romance. I was talking about it this morning, even at a table at breakfast, and quickly got married. We joined a church that he had been attending on Capitol Hill, just like 5 blocks from the U.S. Capitol, and I learned so much there. It was a great place to be a baby Christian. Our oldest child, Beckett, was born in 2010. I love those sweet baby noises. Oh my gosh, baby fever. And it all ended happily ever after, right? You know? Yeah. No, so life is hard. I mean, Jesus said, in this life you will have trouble, but there is so much good. In that season, it was tough to make a living in an expensive city as journalists. It was tough having a colicky baby. On little sleep, marriage was even tough, too. And with my heart and hands so full of all of these people, there's fear and anxiety starting to creep in too. As a newlywed and then a new mom, I remember just looking around the church and searching for examples of how to be a woman of the faith, what it looks like to be faithful wife and mother. And I feel like that just wanted to kind of like, here, somebody tell me exactly what I should do. Do this, 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 and this, like, and then you'll be good. And then I remember kind of feeling a little bit discouraged because, like, I didn't have a situation that allowed me to be a homeschooling, stay-at-home mom in that time. But I remember a Bible study leader at the time was so encouraging to me. These Bible study leaders are so important. Yeah, shout out to the Bible study leaders. I know you're all out there. But feeling so discouraged because I didn't have this situation that allowed me to, like, be this picture of what I thought I should be. But she said that God sees our hearts. And so as a wife, I should be oriented toward my home, my husband, and my children, but that faithfulness can look very different home to home and in different women. And that's totally right. Like, we all have different giftings and using those for different ways for the glory of God. So I think she was totally right. God has made me to be a worker bee with a slight touch of ADHD, which I think has equipped me to juggle. So juggle four children, three of whom are teens or near teens or act like teens, and then our four-year-old, who was a big COVID surprise. And then, so it's been great. I don't know. Right now, these days look a lot like early mornings and late nights and not enough sleep. I know that's the case for a lot of people here. I pray every day for God to give me daily bread and to sustain me and to give me wisdom to raise those teens. And then if anybody has teen tips, like, please find me and give them all to me because I just really need help. And then just to fight sin, because our battle with sin doesn't stop when we become Christians. So to fight my sin and to give me the humility to apologize when I daily mess up. I don't know what the future is going to hold. And as a type A control freak, that's tough for me and a little scary. But I just wanted to leave here with some hope. So the God who did not spare his son for us, cares for us, loves us, pursued us, is with us. I don't know the specifics of your life and what challenges or heartbreaks or pain or fear you're holding, or indeed what the future in this world is going to look like for any of us. But I do know that for the Christian, there is always hope. Jesus has solved our biggest problem, and what we face now will not always be. Our journey as pilgrims in a world that isn't our home is dotted with moments of refreshment, even like this weekend. And ends, as John Bunyan writes in Pilgrim's Progress, at the celestial city. Christian says in that beloved allegory, "Come, pluck up heart. Let's neither faint nor fear. Better, though difficult, the right way to go than wrong, though easy, where the end is woe." So let's keep going. Thank y'all.